Welcome to the Deeks.ai podcast, where Wake Forest innovators unpack the real-world magic of artificial intelligence through candid conversations. I'm Michael Ferrari.
I'm Ryan Scholl.
Please join us as we explore how artificial intelligence is transforming work across campus, one fascinating story at a time. Get ready to discover the human side of technological innovation. On this episode, we are joined by Adam Friedman, Director of the Instructional Technology Group and Professor of Education at Wake Forest University. Please join us as we speak with Adam about his personal journey with AI, both inside and outside of the classroom, as we discuss how AI is reshaping the academic landscape for students and professors alike.
All right, Adam, I'm going to introduce you. This is Adam Friedman, the Director of the Instructional Technology Group and Professor of Education here at Wake Forest. From my extensive internet research, you've been here for close to 20 years, which is quite impressive. Former chair of the education department with a focus on social studies education, taught all over the world, London and the LENS program in Nicaragua. Now, I do have a question about that we'll get to in a minute.
Sure.
You've done a lot of research on technology and pedagogy, and you've published numerous scholarly articles, book chapters, and presentations. So, Michael, we are in the presence of an actual expert on the integration of technology and teaching and learning. So, Adam, when generative AI came out, were you just super excited? Like when that ChatGPT moment came out in November of 22, were you just really super excited or were you a little apprehensive?
I was blown away. So just to tell you the story. So I have three kids. My middle kid, he's 17 now, so he's 15. He was 15 at the time, and he's real like intellectual, real bright guy, and he likes history and as much as I do, right? And technology and sports, it's real similar. And he says to me, he's like, I will not ever. It's one of those moments you don't forget where you were. And I was in the kitchen, and he comes downstairs, and he's like, Dad, you got to check this thing out called ChatGPT. And I'm like, what? I never heard of it. Yeah. And this is in December of 22, and I'm like, what? And he's like, ask you to write an essay on the causes of the American Civil War. He told me, because he knows I'm a social studies teacher. So I'm like, sure, sounds good, whatever. I was like, come on, dude. Like, I wasn't like, he's not really kind of person to like lie to you, but I'm like, come on. The causes of the American Civil War. I was like, whoa, that's pretty good.
And this was still GPT 3?
Yeah.
3.5, something like that?
I think it was 3, because you didn't have to pay for something like that. Anyway, so I'm cheap, so I wasn't doing that. But I was just playing with that original, and I was like, this is actually, like, scary good.
Yeah.
Like, this is, like, scary. And obviously, this is, like, might as well have been, like, when the dinosaurs were on the Earth compared to what it is now, right? This is, and I was like, whoa, this is amazing. So I was like, well, then how do we harness this? Like, this is here. So how are we going to harness this for teaching? Because it kind of makes the whole idea of a lot of what we do obsolete in terms of like, if you can get an essay that's pretty good, and it wasn't like an A+ paper,
of course,
but it wasn't a bad paper. And it was, I think, then I kept playing with it. And I was sitting on my, sit there with my watch, and it'd be like 16 seconds. I'd be writing my name.
Yeah.
I'd be like a typer. I'd be like, on the keyboard. So no, it was crazy good. And so it was like, I just thought it was amazing. So I was like, we have to figure out how to use this, but not just, I thought when the internet came out, it was going to sort of revolutionize education, which it sort of has. But then with this, it's even much more so, because it's like, well, it gives people the quote unquote answer if that's what you're looking for. If you're looking for the facts, it gives you those. Why do you need to memorize facts? It's all right there.
Yeah. So a lot of the buzz around generative AI right now is how it's disrupting all these, you know, everything in the world, but many of these different industries. And education is right at the top. I mean, it is, for positive or negative, it is disrupting the education industry. Now, I'm not fully saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. Do you think this is just a fad? Do you think generative AI might be here to stay?
Oh, it's here to stay. Yeah. I don't think there's a doubt in my mind. I don't know enough about, like, industry and, like, we're talking about earlier in terms of, like, the business model of it all, but in terms of, like, it's there to stay, and it is 100%, in my opinion, 100% there to stay in terms of student use of it. I mean, why would you not use it? Because I feel like, honestly, three of us are having the same conversation that we would have had in 1998 with the internet.
Yes, I 100% agree. I 100% exactly. agree. I think it's you used to go to the library, then you used to Google Wikipedia, yep. And exactly. Now it's like you go to your favorite chat and ask that.
And our three listeners of our podcast are going to love hearing me tell a story again. But, you know, Michael's heard it. When I, you know, my 10-year-old was doing a project, he interviewed my grandmother, my 96-year-old grandmother, and then me and then him about how we did research. But my dad had to do a video call with my 10-year-old son to show him what an encyclopedia was. Because he didn't know what that was. He's like, why would I go to a book to learn information? You know, where we thought Wikipedia was great. You know, this generation coming up, whether it's just asking a question into your phone using voice mode or, you know, probably, you know, the AI learning your thoughts. It's going to be very interesting to know how the flow of information goes.
Oh, definitely.
It seems like you're more on the train of this AI revolution is going to expand the pie and augment the human capabilities rather than disrupt the education in a negative way. Is that a fair assessment?
I think, yeah, that's exactly it. It's right on, man. Right on, 100%. It's my sort of teaching philosophy, teaching style. That's how I've always been in terms of that's, you go back 25, 28 years, like I was, you know, starting teaching when the internet was coming out. I was like, well, we got to use this for teaching. Because I'm really, at the end of the day, nerd with really like social studies. So I was like, oh, cool. So wait, there's primary source documents that I could just click on instead of having to go to a museum or if I don't own them and students could see them. So then I wound up writing my dissertation on that in terms of teachers' use of primary source documents in their classroom. And I've always just been really curious about how it's being used and why it's being used, or in some cases, why it's not being used. But then, of course, at the end of the day, too, I'm always interested in how that impacts student learning and student achievement as a result of that. So, yeah. So then with, you know, you mentioned Wikipedia, because I think that's a great source too. People are, because I remember when that came out, people were like, oh, it's terrible, Wikipedia. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, it's pretty awesome. I'm not saying you're going to copy and paste it, but it's a really good starting point. I'm all about efficiency because you only have so many hours in a day. And I will say, as this semester, I'm really actively encouraging my FYS students to use, they have to use AI. That's part of assignments for their paper.
Talk a little bit about that. I mean, you have a specific use case, a specific assignment you give to your students.
Yeah, and what I've always done in the past is, it actually makes more sense if I give it a little more context in terms of what I've done in the past.
Sure.
Because I teach my favorite class of all time, with apologies to my other classes, for the three students, three people who are listening. But it is my first year seminar. It's like sports, culture, and geography. I created it. So it's kind of a combination of like social studies and sports.
Cool. And can you give us the nickel definition of what a first year seminar is?
Absolutely. Yeah. So first year seminar, I'm not sure just Wake Forest. I think other schools do it, but I really believe in the idea. I'm a big fan of helping people sort of transition into college life, having been a high school teacher. And so it's the, I think what it is, there's one sort of discrete topic. There are a lot of discrete topics that usually have interest to a professor, and then they create the course based on it. I've heard things on like, I've heard of them being on like on monsters to like Roman literature to, you know, mine. And so you have all this huge array, but every student at Wake Forest has to take one. And it's, and I really like that they limit it to 16 students per section. And so you have, and it's really very much discussion based. And at the same time, it's not a, I always think of it as like a complement to writing 111, where there's a lot of writing assignments too, where I really encourage students to write and work on their writing and get feedback from it. And so that's sort of like the nutshell of what first year seminar is.
My personal anecdote was, I think I was the first or second year ever to have a first year seminar.
Yeah, you were, I think. Yeah.
And it was one of the coolest experiences. You came in and I had one of the former VPs, John Anderson, as my teacher. And it was some crazy course that, like, I go to college and take this. It had nothing to do with anything I was studying, but it was like the introduction to college. And it's a very cool idea. So that's why I wanted to.
Yeah, I think it's a, and honestly, it's, I know this sounds, people are like, really? But I always say this, it's one of the things that attracted me to Wake Forest. Thankfully, they hired me, but I was really intrigued in creating a course like this. So it's really focused on first year students. And at the same time, it's like, I always think it's really important to think critically. And so that's part of it too. So it's like just question, this is where we are. How did we get here? So I do that a lot too. So anyway, so in the past, I've always had students do is write reading response, like, and I keep it open-ended on purpose. So it's hard. So it's, write a 2-page reaction paper to anything we've read, from a website, to a chapter in a book, to an article, whatever the case may be. You have a lot of reading. They have to, throughout the semester, they have to pick any one aspect and write about it. I give them some prompts on how to challenge your thinking, what do you think about it, so on, how to relate to the theme of the course, the intersection of sports, culture, and geography. So I've always given them that. And it's always been tough. Sometimes they come into college and they want, or they're used to, specific directions. I want you to do that. And I'm like, I'm not giving you the direction. That's why part of this course, you need to think through what this means for you. And you can't do this starting at 11 p.m. the night before. It's just too much to do. It's too hard. It won't be good. And so then, to be honest with you, since December of 22 when ChatGPT came out, I felt like, but that's one thing about, I would love to chat about this, hear y'all's thoughts about ChatGPT or AI in general, where you can't really detect it, right? And I talk about disrupting education.
Yeah.
Because it used to be, if you were copying, I'd find this. I see kids, I'm like, come on, you didn't come up with that word. I would Google it and find it. I'm like, no way you knew that word. And you don't talk that way in class. And all of a sudden you're writing this, come on. So that's something I definitely would love to, the three of us to chat about. Yes. But, anyway, so I was reading a lot of papers that I didn't quite, I felt like they were assisted a little bit. And where's the line? Where's that line of like cheating and you're on, and it's a fine line. So I said, I'm just jumping in. So I made them, you had to use ChatGPT, or I said, you don't have to use ChatGPT. You can use Claude or whatever. I don't care what it is, but you have to use something, take screenshots of it, copy and paste, and then paste the screenshots first. So I could read your interactions, and you have to have a minimum of three conversations, three sort of like dialogues, I should say, with the AI tool to get background, and then that way I can see what you've actually done, and it'll help write your paper. And the papers have been so much better. I just graded some yesterday. I mean, I spent all day yesterday grading. They were so much better than they've been in the past. Anecdotal, maybe there's better students. I don't know, but I feel like
that's what they're going to argue.
Yeah, but it's cool because I know they didn't use, I figure if you're going to do that, then ChatGPT. Then use AI for another. I mean, you're wasting it. So that way, they had to have the interactions. They pasted it in. And they wrote much better essays, much more well thought out essays, in my opinion.
What's interesting, there's an academic piece of software called Turnitin.
Oh yeah,
and they just announced a product that hasn't been fully released yet. But it's a workflow where the students turn in their assignment in Turnitin, but they do all the work in Turnitin as well. So they interact with each model, and you can pick whichever model you want to use. So the professor can see exactly how they did it in all their interactions inside of Turnitin. I don't know how that's going to work, but it's an interesting flow because, as you were saying, the cheating, you can't detect that. There's too many false positives now. Mm-hmm. People say, oh yeah, I can tell by the words that these students use, and this is a common word through some of these AI models. And yeah, maybe, but it turns out there are more false positives than, actual cheating they find. That's from what I've heard. Question for you, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
So, Adam's in the classroom, you and I aren't.
Yep.
From outside the classroom, where do you think the line of how students should really be able to use, does it stop at brainstorming? Does it stop at rewriting?
I mean, the way I haven't been in any kind of school really for a while.
Why I'm asking you.
Yeah, but I mean, it really just sounds like the new version of how things used to be anyway. Like the way I feel about it, like when I was in school, if I had to write a paper about art history or something, whatever the subject was, I had to do research anyway. I'm looking in a book, looking online, finding, these sources, and writing my paper, doing my assignments. But I was still getting that info from like elsewhere. So like my viewpoint is as long as the information is correct, if we hit like this point where for whatever reason, using AI is giving you a bunch of like, false information, then that's a problem. But I don't really see the difference. And I know from using AI, a lot of times it will provide sources for me. So like it could give me information I'm looking for. I could see exactly where it's coming from and like how much that's really no different than when I was in high school or college using the internet to write stuff. So it's tricky. I don't know. It's tricky.
It is, because I think every academic institution is struggling with that academic integrity, you know, those ethics. Because where does that line stop? You know, can you use AI to be a brainstorming partner and help you think of ideas? How is that different than using your fellow student potentially? Mm-hmm. You know, what if you write the paper, put it through one of the AI models and say, proofread for me?
Yeah.
Well, is that like asking your friend or my sister used to send me her papers when she was in college, asked me to proofread them. And she was in a different, she was actually in London. She was in a different time zone. And I tried to explain to her the concept of time zones. Why are you sending this to me at 2 a.m.? I have stuff to do. You know, I would much more appreciate it if she ran it through Gemini or ChatGPT or something like that. But it's an interesting concept, is where is that academic integrity? Who owns that work? And so, Adam, I'm sure you struggle with that constantly, because there's no right or wrong answer, and nobody knows the answer.
And it's funny because I was having this conversation with recently, but you know, the next to like, well, is it your work? So the same thing. And it's like, well, here's the thing. Like if you're typing an email, you just have to hit tab and Gmail will put in the, so is that your email? I mean, really? I mean, I don't have an answer, but is that your email? Or like, I always think on my phone, you know, 29 hours a day. So it just puts the words in for you.
Yeah.
So am I cheating? I use it.
Yeah.
I don't know. But you're right. That's such a great question. Cause it's like, is it,
where do you draw that line?
Where is that? Yeah. It's like one of those things, like, you know, it's like, say with charisma, like, you know, it's hard to measure, but you know it if you see it.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's similar to this. Cause it's like, yeah, you can't, can you turn in a paper that you just took 2 seconds, write me a paper on this and this? Yeah. But what's the difference, right? I don't know. I wish and I guess it must be, it's a struggle, I suppose, for everybody to come up with a policy too. Cause it's like.
I was attending a virtual conference put on by another school just the other day, and it was a writing professor there, and he was talking to students. So this is students at another college, and the students were just confused because they're like, well, Professor A says this and Professor B says this, and there's no school-wide policy. And, you know, at Wake Forest, we don't have a full school-wide policy. And, you know, that's no shade on the administration right now, because everybody's struggling. And from all the schools that I've looked at, nobody has a complete policy. It's unfair if the same policy applies to engineering versus education to biology. How do you do that?
Yeah. And then do you guys think, I feel like a lot of this just to me, it's like I so appreciate getting to have this conversation is so good. Because at the same time, it's like someone's like, I hate to throw out the word like academic freedom, but it sort of is, right? Because I wouldn't want some, or at least pedagogical freedom. I wouldn't want, I'm not saying I'm the best teacher in the world. I'm not saying that at all, but I am saying I feel like I know my students and I feel like I know what would work and what they need.
Yeah.
And someone else could be, you know, there's nothing to do, you know, experience, whatever. Like some people might say, like, I don't want my students learning that way. I want them, because I think in some things that sometimes it is helpful. You have to sort of memorize facts at some point. And so, but I don't think in this case, in this class, I don't know, I don't think you have to memorize facts. But I could see that we're in, so who am I to tell somebody that they have to do, they have to have an assignment like that? And who is someone else to tell me that I can't?
Would you? Yeah. Dovetail excellent into my next question. What does the future of assessments look like? How do you possibly assess a student? It used to be you could do multiple choice tests, and then you could do essay questions, then you can do writing assignments at home. And some professors used to make you close your computer.
Right.
I had an old business professor that I did not get along well with. She didn't let me take notes on my computer. But what does it look like now in this age? I mean, how would you like to be assessed? If you were in a class and the teacher said, I'm going to grade you A, B, C, D based on your knowledge, and you had access to every piece of human knowledge and it could be reproduced.
I mean, coupling it like also with the previous stuff we were just talking about is like, because I've been thinking about this quite a bit, is like, I think it's just a result. Like, I think the results of, you know,
what you're looking to do should be the real, like, defining aspect of it. So for instance, I was working recently on a project and I showed you this to like make some data, like I had some data points and we were like, it was like, hey, try to figure out a good way to show this to people, show these data points on, you know, this site. And so I was working with AI and I was like, here's what I'm thinking. Can you help me make this? And so working with AI, I was able to complete that idea I had in literally under 10 minutes. So the way I look at it is, would my employer prefer that I put my nose in a book or even just, you know, use Google to find posts of, hey, how do I do this? And then have it switch to this, transition to this and put that code together? Or are they going to say, hey, you used your time more wisely. You used AI. You got something done in 10 minutes that, you know, 5 years ago, it might have taken me a week to figure out exactly how I want to do what I want to do. So that's kind of how I've been viewing it is like, what's the result you're looking for? And what's the benefit of using AI versus not using AI? And for me, like, I feel like it's a no-brainer. So for a student, I personally think it would depend on what field they're in. But
yeah, it's probably a biology assessment. Again, is different than a computer science assessment or a, you know, 18th century British literature assessment.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're talking about higher education and the college world. You know, in the real world, when you get out, I love to learn.
Yeah.
I want to just learn. And I pick up my phone and I ask Gemini a question, I get an immediate answer. Or I type something in, I go to YouTube, I get an immediate answer. I'm learning those things. But I'm in the classroom when you're assessing if a student has mastered a topic or a subject. You're in a no-win situation.
You are. And then not to open this whole can of worms, so it almost makes me think if we're revolutionizing this access to information, which we are.
Absolutely.
What if we revolutionized the grading system?
Make yourself famous. How are you going to do that?
I wish I had. I honestly, sometimes there are days, and on it, I think sometimes, because we have this, you know, A, B, C, D, F model.
Exactly.
That's been going on well longer than, you could probably add our three ages together. it's been a lot, right? And it's been gone forever. But is that effective? I don't know. I mean, actually,
I can pull up my transcript and tell you how effective it was.
Me too. But seriously, because then you have them. Because then you have these other issues that lie in with that, right? Because then, not exactly. But if we're already blowing up, if you think about teaching, it's like planning, instruction, and assessment. The sort of like three elements of teaching.
Sure.
Like the planning and instruction really are kind of, you could plan, you could also write, like, don't forget, like, the planning part. You could plan that in,
I was going to get there. I
10
mean,
seconds. Like, a lesson that used to take, it takes me hours to create a lesson. First time to create a class takes me double. My rule of thumb is if I teach for 75 minutes, it takes me 150 minutes to create the lesson. And so,
okay, I'm going to call a 20 second timeout here.
Yes.
Because you gave me a perfect segue into a comment I heard from a student at one point saying, well, it's not fair that the professor doesn't allow us to use, she said, ChatGPT, where I know she's using it to create her class or her course. So on the other side, what about the planning? Is it fair? Is it helpful? Does it, when you are creating a course, does that open up a world of possibilities to you?
100%. 100%. It gives me ideas. It gives me, why wouldn't I want to use it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you have this information that's, I'm not saying I have to copy it, but it's like, mm-hmm. I'm just a big fan of getting multiple perspectives.
For instance, so you're using it to brainstorm.
Absolutely.
What if your student said, well, can I use it to brainstorm on this paper?
That's why I created that assignment.
Honestly.
Exactly. I think it's hypocritical to say otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
It's just me. I mean, other people might not think that. I mean.
But that was a fascinating perspective coming from a student who threw it right back in their professor's face, said, well, you're using it.
They are.
Now, I mean, granted, you pull some levers and then, you know, things are slightly different, but it is an interesting perspective.
Because it is, I mean, and here's the other thing, speaking of, so when this is, I've done this several times, and that you would think I've done this for a minute, I have a degree in it, and I said, I just want to see this. So I remember one prompt I put in not that long ago, I said, can you write me a a syllabus and a schedule for teaching, say, social studies method. That's what like the thing is social studies course. Can you write me a syllabus and I like time. I like to time it. I don't know why, because I'm always like I like time. See how long things take me. 29 seconds later, I couldn't have done again if I was just typing it. I couldn't have thought of it. And I was like, oh yeah, I would. Yeah, that's a good point. They put it in order. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't just topics. I mean, because these things build on one another. Right? And I was like, well, this is really good. And it wasn't, I couldn't have come up with something maybe equivalent to that in give me an hour. And I would need resources. This wasn't off the top of my head. But then am I cheating if I look on my laptop for what I've done and what's been done? Mm-hmm. I use a book. If I took a book off my shelf and like said, oh yeah, I would want to include it.
Exactly.
Is that cheating?
Exactly.
I mean, I don't have it all in my head.
Yeah. See, and then I don't teach, but in thinking about it, it's like in my mind, it's like, all right, so he saves all that time doing that. So you can kind of view it then like, so then he has all this extra time, if it's helping with his materials, that he can invest in other ways to maybe offer more like case by case basis of helping his students, grading, paying, you know,
spending more time with it. That's why the students come there, because you can go to Wikipedia and learn something, but why do you really come to college to access some of these resources? And you personally are one of those resources.
Well, a lot. And so honestly, to your point, it's so true, right? Because it's like, I can plan a lot faster, but I still grade very painstakingly.
Yeah.
I really do. I feel like it's just totally disrespectful. I say this to them, but I'm serious. I say, look, the worst feedback in the world is the good job.
Yep.
That sucks. Like, you don't want feedback. That's not what you want. That's not why you're here, right? So I read every single word they write, and I correct it. The guy told me this morning in class, you wrote just a beautiful paper. And he said to me, on Canvas, it comes up that there's all these comments. He's like, my first thing is, it was that bad? I'm like, no, it's that good. But it was like, it was beautiful. But I gives me, to your point, gives me so much more time to grade, which is what they want, right? And it's not even like great. I'm not even a big grade person. Like,
it's whatever. Constructive feedback.
Exactly. It's like, it's the feedback to what they need. In terms of that's why they're here. I said you go to college to improve. You're in school to improve. You came in as a hopefully decent writer. You wouldn't have gotten awake otherwise. But at the end, I want you to be an excellent writer. Different between being a good high school writer to being a good college writer. There's a difference. So
I want to transition to another topic that I'm incredibly excited about. Especially because I have two young children coming up through the education system. They are wildly different academic levels.
Yep.
Personalized learning. So now with the advent of this artificial intelligence, you can really tailor a learning plan. I've heard stories of education at all different levels, but especially at the elementary level, where there are no more teachers in the classroom. Students are learning directly from the AI, but the plan is tailored exactly to their strengths and weaknesses. So every bit of the assignment, whether it's reading or an activity, it's based on what they are strong and what they are weak on. So it focuses more on their weaknesses to bring that up. I've seen that a little more in the lower levels, but we exist in a college environment. Luckily, we don't have those 300 person seminar rooms taught by one TA. I mean, we do have some larger classes, and that can't be the most effective way spewing the information out to, let's say, 100 students. They all don't learn the same way. They all don't take the information in the same way. So if you can personalize that learning journey to each student, I think that's unbelievably fantastic. Mm-hmm. And that can really shape a kid's future, because it can give them the knowledge they need. So I want to open that up to your thoughts.
Yeah, it's really talk about like revolutionizing teaching, right? Because especially when you're talking about like elementary grades, and just as for many listeners, I'm speaking way out of turn. I'm talking about elementary. I mean, I had elementary age kids,
of course.
But I don't know anything in terms of like professionally about it. I mean, it's all anecdotal, so I just want to put that out there. But So then it's almost like, if you want to talk about a philosophical question, it's like, why do you go to school? Because then you're going to do really personalized learning. Couldn't you just do it at home? if that's the goal. So is what's the goal of school overall? Is it to be part of, is it like, there's also that social construct, the hidden curriculum, getting along with others, the following rules. Do we live in a society, you know, that we live in this like multicultural democratic republic, you know? And so like, how do we, what's the purpose of this?
Listen, I don't think any leader here is going to love this statement, but I've always said that academics is only a small part of your college experience. Talking to a professor, you may not exactly love that.
No.
Human growth of a student when they come.
It's not. I think academics play a part in it, not hopefully a significant part, in my opinion. I hope. Knock on wood, but seriously, it's. You're right. Part of being in college is being in college. It means not being at home. It means doing your laundry. That means figuring out when you're going to eat.
Dealing with semi-real world problems.
Yeah.
You know, not being able to turn to mommy and daddy all the time.
Working. People always say, I don't know anything about like the housing situation here, but I do. There have to be conflicts with roommates.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah. Of course. Full disclosure to possible one of my former roommates who might be listening. We had to switch. And, you know, the moral of that story is we got along later in our college career, but we did have to switch. We didn't get along. But that was a life lesson right there.
But you had to navigate that at 18 years old that you wouldn't have if you were doing this, like, truly, you know, because it's like, to what extent do we want people being in school, you know? So,
yeah. Yeah, I think those are good points of things that like AI just couldn't like replicate. Like, I think one of the most valuable things about college for me was like I really needed those years of like learning accountability, learning like, you know, you have these duties that you have to do and you have to be responsible, time allocations. So at first when I'm like, man, why do I have to take this course on, again, like art history or something, and then, you know, focusing in on that and being like, yeah, you know what? It taught me that I'm going to have to like solve problems and figure out what I don't know and learn it. And I do that all the time at work, you know, now is it's like, you know, if there's something we want to accomplish and I don't know exactly how to do it, I have the confidence from, you know, going to school and all that, I can figure it out. You know, it helped me, you know, just all like you got, like you said, those more peripheral things kind of like was some of the most valuable aspects that I just don't think that like a fully like AI driven like classroom or something could really replicate, honest.
So that's a wonderful statement on the value that higher education institutions still provide, even though we can have access to all this information and we can have personalized learning paths and really dive into that. There is still a value for these institutions that are academic and cultural to still exist.
And that you have that relationship piece too, right? Like, to like student to teacher, teacher to student, like relationship piece that you really like, you know, using your art history example, right? I mean, I took an art history class in college, and I was like, same sort of thing. And I actually see, I sort of saw what they were saying, like almost like afterward. Because teaching doesn't always pay dividends immediately. It's that afterward, that sort of like that critical thinking, that artistic way of thinking and comparing different cathedrals. That's really amazing that they built this. And how did they build that in the 1700s?
Yeah.
You know, I was like thinking to myself, like, afterward. And I was like, hey, I learned that. That's pretty cool, you know?
Yeah, I have a specific example, too, where it was like a strangely defining moment where, like, it taught me about myself, like, maybe jumping the gun a little bit, is I had to like do a research paper on Picasso, and I was like I never liked Picasso's work. I just didn't get it. And then through doing that, because I had to for school, like I took a 180 degree turn, understood what he was going for. Now I get why, you know, I understand his art a bit more and I totally appreciate it. And so like, again, being kind of forced to do the, not forced, but you know what I mean? Like, having to do that and be responsible and do my, you know, assignment. I was like, yeah, I was really shooting myself in the foot by just having my initial idea and not challenging that until I had to.
Something else I want to talk about, and it's my thought sparked by your teaching around the world, specifically Nicaragua. So I was down in Managua at Casa Dingledean when we set that up. Mm-hmm. I saw what the city was like. I saw what the people were like down there. And I saw the access to the resources they had. And it was not anywhere near what Wake Forest students have. Even their businesses that were set up, they lack the resources that we have. You've taught at different places around the world, teach social studies. How do you think AI can make some of these opportunities more equitable?
Well, that's a great question. To me, like, that's the whole thing with, like, even like with the internet, but AI specifically really does give access to information, like in Nicaragua, in any language, in real time. Mm-hmm. And it does really very much, all you need is that internet connection. And I will also say, I've been all around Nicaragua, which is an amazing, beautiful country. It's my favorite experience of probably the coolest place I've ever been in my life. The sweetest people. I got to go there several times, and it's just, I'm still incredibly thankful that I had that opportunity. Thankful to Klein Harrison for giving me that opportunity. It was amazing. We got to work with this place, Project Chaco Sainte, which is, these folks were, it was a, these kids were literally living in the Managua city dump.
Yes. Yes.
And then we got to, and then like kids would like sniff glue to, so they wouldn't be as hungry. It was like terrible. So they've built this school. I'm just a big believer in education, obviously, but they built a school physically. And for like, and this is like 5 kilometers off of an actual road. I mean, so off a paved road. So, I mean, sort of in this, you know, outside of the city. And so people got to have this community, and they built a physical school. And again, all you need is this. I could pull up pictures on my phone, and it's just incredibly moving. People were, you know, really trying to better themselves, lives for their kids. And you have, to your point, Ryan, right? You have, imagine having had AI while they're doing it. So you can have this access to information that it's not going to make you learn, but it will give you those, like, that's one of those opportunities, things where you're talking about, like, it's like personalized learning. And I feel like it could really, I also think, and I don't know this at all, I'm just guessing, but I feel like it could really expedite learning process.
Of course.
Because you can cover a lot more, because a lot of what school is sometimes is, it's that, like, all right, come in, sit, you know, it's like this way, if you're in a place and everyone had their own computer, their own internet connection, you really could not only expedite, you can catch people up, but at the same time, if someone's here already, you can accelerate them here. You can do all that through different AI programs. And so, yeah, it really can provide opportunities to...
Because that's what they're missing down there, the access to those opportunities.
Elon.
And as long as Elon repositions his Starlink, you know, right over that, gives them the internet access, and they have access to just, I mean, let's start with some of these simple AI chatbots.
Yeah.
You know, you give them a Chromebook, $150, $200 with internet access, they can have access to the same material, some of the same information that Wake Forest students do.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
And you level, not fully level the playing field,
sure,
but you get it a lot closer there.
And even in Nicaragua, where you have such a huge disparity of wealth, where you have this, I don't know the statistics, but I do feel like there's like a top 1% that owns a tremendous amount of the wealth.
Perfect.
And then the bottom 99% have obviously much less. And I remember hearing a statistic, don't quote me on this, but something to the effect of people lived on like $1 a day, a US dollar a day, which is just unfathomable. And so, but all of a sudden, if AI tools, if Starlink was right above there and you could have, Chromebook, like you said, you could really sort of democratize education in a way that you couldn't otherwise. And that's kind of why I'm a fan of it well. So you have this instant access to information. And why would you want to not have that?
A friend of mine, they were interested in getting into like programming and stuff like that. The job they were working, you know, they were kind of strapped for cash, you know, so to say. And so they were talking to me because they know what I do for work. And I actually worked with, I think it might have been ChatGPT. And I explained to ChatGPT that my friend was interested in coding. They weren't, you know, they couldn't, you know, go to school and all that. And it actually gave me like a good like outline of the order that they should go for, like ideal for learning languages. And I was able to have it create me documents for key terms, like, you know, variable functions, things like that. Some examples of how to use those pieces of code in good milestone projects for, can you provide me with a good example of when they can complete this project, they should move on to the next stage and let them know, like, when would be a good indicator that they're prepared to take the next step or apply for a job and all that. And again, in less than 15 minutes, it was able to give me all that. And I could have probably even expanded it further. So then now they had the resources and their free time to go based on what that was providing.
That's the real life modern day version of the bar scene in Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
When he said, yeah. Hey, you know, I just learned all that for $1.50 in late fees at the local library.
Yeah, and then my friends didn't have to spend a dime, you know, and stuff.
All right, Adam, being an AI evangelist, a champion of this, I need you to speak for all of Wake Forest now. Are you prepared?
I'm ready.
Okay. How can Wake Forest be a leader in the integration of generative AI into its mission?
Well, that's a great question. Yeah.
If we want to be a leader, what kind of integration do we need?
I think it's funny because I think the one thing I really do believe in Wake Forest in terms of what we do already, in terms of we have this, I don't know the statistic, but really great faculty to student ratio. We have faculty who are on campus. We have faculty who are, go with me on this one, but in terms of what we do already, I think we're really well positioned to take to like sort of that next level with AI. Because we already, I think, I personally, what I wouldn't want is to be like, kind of like, all right, knock yourselves out. Here are your AirPods. Here's your assignment. Go. And yeah, you could use AI all day for that. But that's not what we do. Mm-hmm. And I think what we do is so good in terms of that faculty-student relationships. I think, you know, this like the engaged liberal arts, the students really, the idea is to come here and think critically and then develop your own ideas. I think so to be a leader, I think, well, A, you do have to use it. Use it, but use it, harness it. Harness its power, but do what we're doing. So I don't think what we're doing is, certainly, I think what we're doing is excellent. And then, like, how can we take what we have, add an AI component to what we're already doing? And everyone's going to do that a little bit differently. And there's not I just don't think there's a prescription. Even in my different classes that I teach, I don't use AI to the same A, degree, and B, way. Just because I teach a graduate class in social research and social studies education. I'm not going to use AI. I use AI, but I'm not going to have them create prompts like the way I would. These are grad students, so it's like, you know, ask them to do it in a different way. So I think thinking about it, what it is, what the potential is, and how to harness it for your class, but having the time to do it and having the time to think about it, I think is the way for us to do it. Because I think what we do already is good.
Mm-hmm.
And then just having the time to purposely think about how do we harness the power of AI? And there's steps to get to that. I think the first, like, what is AI? It's because it gets this bad name.
Good luck.
Well, really, it gets a bad name sometimes, right? It's like, oh, I'm not going to dispute it today.
So what would you say to the professors specifically who have that negative view of AI? It's only for cheating and the students are going to completely lose their critical thinking. How would you defend your position on AI?
So, and that's where it goes back to like to grades too, because people tend to cheat when they're in that really high stakes situation. People don't cheat on low stakes assignments. People cheat on the high stakes. That's and they start freaking out. People cheat when they're. I don't think there are bad people who want to come in and want to cheat the system. They come in, they cheat because they don't feel for whatever reason. Maybe other people are doing it, or you know, they feel other people are doing it.
We'll get a psychology professor later on to talk all
exactly.
About
that. Let's talk about
that
exactly.
A great conversation.
It really would. Like, why do people cheat?
Absolutely.
And then there's nothing like it's like cheat proof, but the argument is that people have been doing this. People have been since we were all in school. Yeah. People have been cheating.
What are the incentives?
Right, and that's where
risk reward.
Right, and that's where it comes back to grades. Because I think actually I really think something because it becomes transactional sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm here. I need my A. I'm like, I don't say that obviously, but it's like that's the idea, right? I'm here. I sort of expect to make an A. I'm gonna have an A, and I'm like, well, then how do they get to that? The easiest path is if they have to cheat, you know. To defend that, like, but cheating's been going on. Oh, it's just a cheat. I'm like, well, that's the same exact argument people said about Wikipedia. Yeah. If y'all recall that, yeah. Right?
And the TI-85X calculator.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the like people, you know, like writing little notes on their hands. in pen and then like,
yeah,
you know, like on the blue books. I mean, people are going to, so it's like, I mean, to me, that's like not that, to me, that's not like the best argument of all people about cheating, like, because people always cheat, you know? So it's like, well, okay, so how do we take this and use it? And I would just encourage people to ask it questions that you might ask colleagues at a conference. See how good it is. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not good in your field. I don't know. Maybe it's not going to be very effective for, you know, for me, like, you know, how to write a lesson plan on teaching the three, that's how it started with me. How to three underlying causes of the American Civil War. That's write a lesson plan on that.
Mm-hmm.
90 minutes. Oh, that's pretty good. And then, so maybe it would work better in my field. Well, then think, how can we have our students use it?
Would you think, I'm curious if you think this would be a true or false statement, but do you think maybe some of the problem arises from the fact that a lot of education, it seems similar still to when I was in school, where they're just still built upon this like initial thought that you are going to have limited access to information, but that's just not true anymore. Like I could literally have thousands upon thousands of books on my phone. Now, given I wouldn't want my electrician to pull up a book to be like, how do I wire this socket again? But the fact is just like information is so readily available.
Well, we've talked about this because we've used, I definitely have used multimodal AI to do electrical work. I've held my phone up and said, how do I do this?
It's funny you say that. Because I would actually, it's so funny. I love perspectives because I'll be totally honest with you. Because I just had electrical work done in our house not too long ago. And he seemed like a real nice guy. And obviously it's working. We haven't had a fire, so I guess it's working. But no, I would have zero problem. And in fact, I would actually be totally cool with somebody saying like, I'm 99% sure I know how to do this, but I want to double check.
Yeah.
So I would be okay with that. Like I'd have no, like, in fact, I would almost think like, oh, that's pretty cool. Cause like sometimes I think with situations like that, like, oh, I got it. Do not tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And then it's like, dude, like you messed this up. Like I would much prefer someone to sort of like take a step back.
Yeah.
And think for one second, like, I just want to like, I know what I'm doing, but cause the thing is like for like a paper and like social studies, I know what to do, but it doesn't hurt to like have a little reassurance.
Yeah.
And I'm still going to do it better than the person sitting over there because I've done it a long time.
Yeah.
And I'm still like, I still know what I'm talking about. I would like to just double check.
Yeah.
And I'd have no problem with that. And it's like the sort of like the example, the ultimate, like not ultimate, but an example. Like, y'all know like in London, the, like taxi drivers have to do like the knowledge.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they have to go through a big test.
Oh, and it's in, talk about like assessment. I find like assessments really interesting. So it's like they have to do like, it's like five separate assessments and they have to show up and you have to ask all these questions. How do you get from like here to here? What are some routes to get from here to here? And I think that's...
Can you just use GPS?
But they really do it.
Yeah,
they know it.
Exactly.
But the thing is, I've been in taxis where... And I always will taxi before Uber. I won't Uber in a lot because I think the... But it's not... I wouldn't be upset if a guy pulled out his phone and was like, just he's like, I just want to double check.
Yeah.
Like, I respect that.
Yeah.
I totally respect that because that's a whole lot more knowledge than like, because you know, when you're driving somewhere for the first time,
yeah,
and you put it in and you're like, you get an Uber, you're like, does this person really
get
it?
Yeah.
You know, so like, to me, like, I have no personal problem with it, but I can see where you're saying.
Years ago, I was an appliance repair technician and I would do that. So it'd be like, I'm pretty sure it's this, you know, you need a new pump or something. But my perspective, I would say, is I think it was pretty obvious when there was something there was a difference that was pretty perceivable by customers when like I was just double checking something and I would tell them, or like, oh, I don't know. I have to find out this. I've never seen this before.
Right. If so fixing my refrigerator, you're like, oh, dude, what's that?
Yeah.
You know, I see what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We are rapidly running out of time.
Thank you for having me.
So thank you for coming. But yeah. I do have a final question.
Sure.
Did the Mets mortgage their future with the Juan Soto contract?
It's not my money. So, you know, I'm cool with, you know, it's not my money. I think, you know, Uncle Steve is very generous and here's the thing. I've always heard this, always thought this, my dad would say this, good pitching beats good hitting. So without good, and in this day and age, without good, you really have to have really good pitching as well. So,
can Juan Soto pitch?
That's the problem. Exactly. I'm not even sure he's...
Now, I've asked Gemini
to give me a Long Islander's perspective.
Love it. Long Islander's
perspective. Yeah, I'm not sure Gemini loves it.
It's funny because I've been in the South for so long now. I've been in the South for most of my life. I never would have thought that, but I have like more years have been in south of the Mason-Dixon line than north of it.
That's me too, but I'm not giving up my northern roots yet.
I'm still like with sports. I'll be a Mets fan, Knicks fan.
Still more of a pro sports fan than college. This is what I grew up.
I get it. I totally get it. Yeah.
All right. Anyway, thank you, Adam.
Thank you guys.
Thank you for listening to the Deeks.ai podcast, where Wake Forest innovators unpack the real-world magic of artificial intelligence through candid conversations. We hope you'll continue to join us as we explore how AI is transforming work across campus, one fascinating story at a time.